Thanks. And I'm not a social worker, but by studying something that I care about, which is disaster recovery, I was exposed to the issue of collaborative case management, social work in the context of disasters. And it really kind of hit home on a lot of levels. But I just want to share, this is a stepping stone on the way to my dissertation, which is going to be about disaster response and recovery. And it was an ethnography, very qualitative, but I think and I hope that you'll appreciate some of what came out of it. Let's see, I'm going to go with that button. Yeah, that works. Okay, no disclosures. And this is the starting point. This used to be someone's home. I'll describe the fire itself, but the primary loss of homes was in a trailer park. We all have certain images that come to our minds when the term trailer park is used, especially in the context of disasters. Some people make a lot of jokes about it, but these homes were a little bit different. This used to be a freestanding structure here, a garage, built next to the trailer, the mobile home. And the people who lived here, they were middle class people with retirement, with insurance, with all the rest, who couldn't afford homes in the LA housing market, but still had some resources. And a lot of them were retired, but not completely, and most of them were adults living alone or with children, adult children with special needs, things like that. You'll see here that they lost everything fast. The fire came in really hot, really fast, and it just tore this area apart. It looked like the landscape of the moon in certain areas. The homes in the background were part of the same development, and they were all red-tagged and off-limits. The Department of Public Health sealed off the entire area, so even the homes that weren't touched, the people who lived in those homes, untouched by fire, I should say, those homes were still off-limits, and people weren't allowed back in there for months. This was one of the more haunting pictures, but this picture came from somewhere else. It's important. This came from the Northridge earthquake, but it's important because of that little horse symbol. This community, Sylmar, California, it's the northern edge of the city of Los Angeles. It's as far away from downtown and Hollywood as I am on the west side of L.A., and people literally ride horses down the street. When we think of L.A., certain images come to mind as well that don't always hold up once you go in and start looking at the individual communities. Who would have thought? And that leads into some of the characteristics of the community that we found. So of the 480 homes that burned, the overwhelming majority were in the mobile home park. This was one of three major fires going on simultaneously across three counties. And while Southern California, like certain other parts of the country, have a long history with fires, this was a significant endeavor for the response agencies. Whether or not they could have gotten the fires out quicker or handle it better if there was only one fire at a time, that's a separate question. But, they did the best they could. I'll just share briefly. This was the first truly joint response between the city of L.A. and the county of L.A. Normally, they work together on a regular basis in terms of sharing resources, but the way that the fire spread, the speed with which it spread, it came over the county jurisdiction into the city line very fast and required a joint incident command, and they learned a lot in that process as well. What I really want to point out here is that response is normally thought of the things we see on TV. The fire engines, the flashing lights, the hoses, you think of the stuff that gets the press, the media attention. The response equally is about handling the displaced people. So tens of thousands of people were evacuated because of these fires. And that role is critically important to the response. It's part of the response, even though it's not an immediate life-saving task. Similarly, recovery is really multiple things. Most people think of recovery in terms of infrastructure, housing, local economy, things of that nature. We forget about the human recovery. And actually, when I say we, I'm talking about the disaster community in a room full of social workers. I'm sure that's the first thing your minds go to. But at least the public officials I was dealing with as part of this study, they didn't really think about that. And they delegated that role entirely to nonprofit organizations. there were no county or city government agencies involved with the long-term recovery group at all when it comes to handling human needs. Department of Social Services was absent. Department of Public Health was not involved. All these agencies that handle human services were not part of this collaborative recovery effort on the human side. What I'll share is that they got off on the wrong foot. There are a lot of ways I can characterize how this went down. I'll share something in a moment which crystallizes it even further, but what I'll say is that the recovery did not happen in a vacuum. The experiences before the fire, a month earlier there was the Merrick fire, which was in the neighboring community, much smaller, much less destructive, but the people of Sylmar watched this happen, and they said, huh, what if that were to happen here? And they started taking some proactive steps, the community leaders, and less than a month later, their own town is on fire. On top of that, the manner in which the response happened. This community came together through affective social ties. They, you know, hey, I know the principal to the high school. Let's call her and get the high school opened up for a shelter. My brother-in-law is the manager at Ralph's. Let's get some food over here. They started managing food, sheltering, donations, all of that on their own within hours of the fire. As people, before the Red Cross was there, before other social organizations were there, as the fire response was underway, before the evacuations were even complete, they were doing for themselves what some communities rely on others to do for them. And then what happened is that when the American Red Cross and its partners, not them alone, when they came in, they said, citizens, we're here to help you. Now please sit down over there and put down what you're doing while you're helped. And I'm a Red Cross volunteer. I'm a Red Cross instructor. That's not exactly how we like to do things, but that's how it happened. It is what it is. So I'm not going to ask you to read this entire quote, but this was written in 1957. You can scan through it, and you'll see the point that we knew this 51 years before this fire happened. This is not a new phenomenon at all. When a community comes together and handles its own problems and takes care of its own business, there's a strong feeling of pride in that, you know, the community coming together. And then when outsiders come in the manner I just described, they're not really reacted to very well, especially when they're treated as if they're doing something wrong or that they shouldn't be doing. And that's kind of what happened. Nothing new about this, which is the most stunning part to me. When I found this quote, I was kind of floored. And this is Fritzen Williams from The Human Being in Disasters, was the name of their piece, which was fantastic, by the way. So my study was not about the people who were affected by the fire, but rather the agencies that came together to form the long-term recovery group. There were about 20 partners. I would say about 15 of those were primary active partners, with a few on the edges. And I did interview some government agency representatives that were keeping tabs on the long-term recovery group, but who were not at the table at the meetings on a regular basis. I put this asterisk down here for a couple of reasons. First, even though they were official agency representatives, their own biases came through that didn't necessarily reflect the agency's perspective. And at the same time, there were two agencies where I interviewed two or more people from that agency and got very different responses, which was interesting as well. Not surprising, though. This is how it basically broke down in terms of factions. You had your locals, who the more formalized agencies from the region called the hillbillies, the yokels, they had a lot of pejorative terms about each other, both sides. And then there were the people who handled disaster response and recovery for the region, for all of Los Angeles, who were essentially strangers to this community. They had no stake in this community. They had no social ties into the community. They came in as outsiders. And what's really interesting is, like, when you look at the Red Cross's current reorganization, and of course when I say current, they're reorganizing every other year, they're actually making their corporate model leaner and meaner and more efficient. And what that's doing is taking their presence out of communities. They're cutting back on their community ties. to save a buck, but what it does is it puts them in a completely different position where they have no investment in the neighborhoods that they're trying to help. They come in like the cavalry came in the Old West. They toot their horns and come in over the hill, galloping really fast, shoot a bunch of stuff up and leave. And then you ask the people who were there when the dust settles how helped they felt. So what was fascinating, I just want to share this. The local groups had their own politics, had their own divisions, had their own history. So did the regional partners, okay? If those weren't familiar with the VOAD, it's the Voluntary Organizations Active in Disasters. I hope that if you're not familiar with them, if you have an interest in disasters, you check it out. They had their own history and politics and hierarchy and such. Now, each group perceived the other to be monolithic. We know better. There were so many internal divides, but it really turned into an us versus them dynamic, which was fascinating to watch. Oops. So, here were the methods that I primarily used. I did this over a four-month period. So I was doing direct observation of their meetings, of their subcommittee meetings, of a few of their community engagement activities. It wasn't just a series of interviews done over a week or two. This was pretty in-depth and long-term. I'll share that in terms of participant observation, I felt a little bit uncomfortable on a few occasions, and this is my first real in-depth experience with it, where they were soliciting me, not just for advice. Well, you study this at school. What do you think we should be doing? The other aspect was, well, what are they saying? What are the other factions saying? And I was actually used to broker a few disagreements, which was not what I expected to be doing. I'll share that. This is what the long-term recovery groups do. This is where the social work comes in. They do client case management by team. They had five primary partners doing client case management that would divide up the number of clients, client households, based upon their own resources and staffing. So one group might have 20 cases, another group might have 35 cases, etc. Then they would provide service referral among that group, and then there were also three key referral agencies that were at the table. The other aspect, I'll say that the client management agencies, and these were primarily from the outside organizations, treated each individual family individually, disconnected. They cited privacy and a variety of other issues that are important, of course. The locals said, well, what about the fabric of the community? What about the fact that these people who were neighbors and had relationships are now scattered through a variety of interim housing options? They were really keen on bringing these people back together by creating forums that would keep that sense of community going after the displacement of the citizens. And what I'll share right now is that due to the insurance policies, the majority of people chose to rebuild on the same plot of property. So now they're just waiting until the fuel burns up or builds up and there's another time for another fire. Luckily, they got a lot of the fuel the first time. Information dissemination, publicity, advocacy, fundraising, these are all other key aspects that were addressed by the long-term recovery group. And here we can see some of the agencies that were represented. There were a lot of interesting dynamics. One key one is that the niche referral services, they were sitting at the table, they were part of the committee, they had incredibly useful services to offer, but the client case management agencies would often not ask the right questions. They didn't know how to properly screen the clients they were serving to understand which of these three referral services could help them. The truth is that every client had something to learn or benefit, some way to benefit from these three groups. I won't explain what each of those three things were in this presentation, but the referral services, they felt as if they should be part of the team, embedded in the process, or at least allow some input on the client intake procedure, and that didn't happen. This was a more or less close-knit group. They had a long working relationship. Providence Health Services was the only new partner. They specialized in certain care for the elderly. So, and there was a significant elderly population. We don't have demographic data quantitatively on the client population, but they were primarily retired. There was a very interesting problem between these two groups. also, as far as the St. Didicus Catholic Parish, the priest and then the lay leadership of the church, they took care of and did what they had to do in the community to help the community, whether it was for their own parishioners or not. And they did it outside of the auspices or the process used by the case managers. So the case managers were interested in things like duplication of services and equitable distribution. They had no oversight over when a family would go to directly to the parish to get something or to ask for something. So they used Catholic Charities to try to influence St. Didicus. And they said, well, you have a relationship with them. You're both Catholics, right? That didn't work out so well. So what was really interesting to me is that one of the St. Didicus Parish representatives who was handling client casework was a former Catholic Charities employee there locally. And so I got a lot of insight into the politics there. And ENLA, the Emergency Network of Los Angeles, was pressuring Catholic Charities to pressure the parish. And the parish was saying, it's our money, it's our community, we'll do what we want. Same dynamic, locals versus outsiders. I'll also share that the local Mormon stake, their people needed or asked for less resources than others. And there's a sense that the social capital and the protective factors provided by that local faith-based organization took care of the needs of their own parishioners very well. I'm not Mormon, but that's the sense that we got. They were part of the long-term recovery group as observers only. They were there for information to take back to their own people. Their parishioners did not participate in the case management process. None of this is new. I bring in Bruce Tuckman's model about group development. They never got out of storming. They never got out of the process of, well, who's in charge and what are the procedures we're going to use. There were certain key things they had to do in a timely manner. First, the fire happened at the end of November. And immediately after, we have the holiday season. What was really fascinating is a lot of the people who were at the long-term recovery group had pre-arranged plans, plane tickets, conferences, all these types of things. And they actually didn't even try to get started formally until January. Well, that's a month and a half later in the real picture. So a month and a half later, after the season of giving has already ended, now they're trying to start their work. They missed a huge window for fundraising. They didn't get their common operating protocol for the five case management agencies to work together because each has their own procedures and policies. That wasn't written until March and wasn't published and functioning until April. They didn't have a fiscal sponsor to hold and manage money. I want to say that was until June before that was formalized. So 6 months, 7 months to get some very basic things done never happened. It was very disappointing, and the community is the one who lost. But it was all about turf wars and who's in charge. And it wasn't just as simple, as clear-cut as the locals versus the outsiders. There was a lot more going on. But this idea of group formation and getting the ball rolling and getting to that point where you can function and serve your clients is critical. Here's a review of some of the other impacts that the clients suffered. There was negligible focus on the social cohesion. I mentioned that the community organizations that were represented, they really did put an effort in, and they had about one event a month. The events were modestly attended, very lowly lightly attended when you consider the population of people affected. The fact that they had these events at all is a good thing, but there was virtually no effort to keep this community connected. People were scattered to the wind. For me, the next step is to create a robust social network analysis out of this. I have enough data for it. That's the next step. And the idea is to show how their position within the social network affected what they did or didn't do or which things got done or didn't get done. That's the next step I can take. Now, in terms of further research, I think that any time that there is an opportunity to study collaborative interagency case management, there are some lessons to learn here. And I think that more than, my perspective is social network analysis. That's what I want to do with this. But I'm sure there are a variety of other theoretical frameworks that could apply here. It's not just disasters either. I'm sure, homeless task forces, that's another example. Teen task forces, where you have different agencies coming to the table with their own missions, their own purposes, their own procedures, that now have to find a common operating protocol. And this will happen time and time again, as long as this interagency stuff is going on. We all know that by working together, we can get our own job done easier, but there's still something in the process, inside that black box, that we have to decipher. And that's me. So thank you very much.